Hello, I'm Matt Wells. This is Media Talk. Coming up, from Jungle Queen to Media Pariah, we analyse the rumpus caused by Carol Thatcher's remarks as another outrage engulfs the BBC. Also in the podcast, as Kangaroo is killed off, who will lead the way for the UK's online on-demand TV market? Plus...
from the Sky Satellite Network, this is Sky News.
Whoosh, breaking news, Sky hits 20. And...
do I buy Country Life butter because it's British?
Butter sales rocket on the back of an ad campaign from a former Sex Pistol. Never mind the bollocks, this is Media Talk from The Guardian. Now this week, Barack Obama proved he is mortal after all, after he admitted to screwing up the nominations of two members of his cabinet. But producer Ben assures me that our two panellists have been strictly vetted for today's recording. Emily Bell is Guardian's Director of Digital Content. You haven't been fiddling the nanny taxes, have you, Emily?
No, they're probably not paying them quite on time.
Okay.
But that's not my fault.
It's Maurice Stewart.
Yes.
Also here in the studio
can we
is...
cut that bit out, just in case that turns out to be true?
Okay. Also here in the studio is Media Guardian's press and publishing correspondent Stephen Brooke. Nothing hiding in your closet, Brookie.
Not at all. I mean, I'm Australian, so I don't give abuse. I cop it at the Guardian.
That's right. Just Armani suits and gym gear, I guess. Jolly good team. But please, no squabbling in the green room. Excuse me now while I just massage my ego.
Media Talk with Matt Wells on Guardian.co.uk.
Oh, that's much better. Anyway, a cold wind blew into Britain this week, and it was an especially cold one if your surname happened to be Thatcher or if you had anything to do with Project Kangaroo. We'll get on to the saga with the Iron Lady's daughter in a moment, but first let's deal with Kangaroo, and we're not talking the marsupial testicles that Miss T famously ate in the Australian jungle in 2005. Project Kangaroo, of course, aimed to be online television's one-stop shop, bringing together hours of programming from the BBC, ITV and Channel 4. But this week, the Competition Commission ruled that Kangaroo should be disbanded because it had the potential to crush competition in the nascent UK online video market. Now, Emily, you may remember we did a podcast at the end of last year saying that Kangaroo was in big trouble. I can't remember if it was you or Janine that was on it that time, but we should probably begin the epitaph now. Why has this happened, do you think, when many people think that this would have been a good thing for the consumer?
Yeah, well, the Competition Commission is not really interested in what's good for the consumer. They're interested in what's good for competition, which in the long term is meant to be good for the consumer. So that's two things. Why did this happen? My feeling is that there are probably two reasons why it happened, one of which is the Competition Commission probably doesn't get out enough around, you know, on and around the internet. And if it's looking at the UK internet market, it might be right, but it's actually making some assumptions about the new world based on the market structure of the old world. And as we know, you know, if you look at YouTube, Hulu, you know, Juiced, all these sort of distribution platforms, largely which come out of the States, that BitTorrent, you know, legal and illegal. Mm. The idea that there would suddenly be a category killer from the slightly feeble sort of origins of Channel 4, ITV and the BBC, who, let's phrase it, couldn't, you know, agree when to hold a meeting. How to. And I think the second thing is actually sort of, you know, how much any of the individual stakeholders really, really cared about pushing it through, given that they've all got their own on-demand services, which are sort of broadly working.
Mm. And then I think they thought, well, if the Competition Commission are going to put conditions A, B, C, D, E and F onto Kangaroo, we might just be better to dump it and go our own ways.
I think that's right. I think they didn't want to be overregulated on it, but it is daft because it, you know, for the consumer, what they want is all of their TV in one place, whether it's online or offline. That's why YouTube has been so tremendously successful, because you can search for a subject and then find anything you want on it, or you can look for, you know, Super Bowl 44 and find all the clips from Super Bowl 44.
Or you want something like iTunes where you just go and you buy it there, one stop.
On our blogs, Lovelight said, as a consumer, I'm completely at a loss to see how this makes my life better. Is the commission also to suggest that each broadcaster creates its own branded televisions as well? And correct me if I'm wrong, hasn't Ofcom just told Channel 4 4 and BBC Worldwide to cooperate to find extra revenue, at the same time as the Commission says they can't do exactly that. Good point, isn't it, Elnie?
Well, no, it is. And this is also where, you know, the left hand, left and right hands of various regulatory bodies just don't meet at any point. So we've got, on the one hand, Stephen Carter and the Digital Britain Review saying even in their interim paper, we want to see partnership. We want to see all sorts of sort of things happening in the market that we haven't seen before. And then you have the Competition Commission saying we can't have partnership because that would be anti-competitive. And it's, as I say, it depends
on... And who are the competitors that the Competition Commission is trying to protect?
Well, I mean, I think it could say that there is a, there could potentially be a market for
rights
a third party.
Right,
yeah, for a third party supply. But the thing with, you know, the thing with all technology markets is you slightly have to let them kind of run and see where they get to, and then you have to post-regulate them. Hence, Microsoft in the 80s kind of got all computers to talk to each other. Then they were regulated in the 90s. Google has established, you know, a sort of worldwide lead in search. At some point, it will have its wings clipped. The, you know, ditto sort of video distribution.
Because we don't know where it's going to head. We don't know the lie of the land.
No, exactly. But you know, if you look at the States, the broadcaster's answer to YouTube was Hulu, which is much more the sort of the kangaroo project.
And that's worked quite well.
It's worked very well. And actually, the idea is that Hulu, I think, were talking about possibly launching an offering in the UK. Interestingly enough, I think the shareholders in Hulu include NBC and
News Corp.
And News Corp. Yeah. So, you know, you could be in a situation where UK broadcasters are on a platform run by American corporations making revenue, which is partially returned to UK broadcasters, but also partially returned to American shareholders, which is not in a policy sort of situation where we want to end up. All of the sweat has been around how do we get more money back to UK content creators.
And interestingly, in the penultimate or very long down the back end of the press release the Competition Commission put out, you could see that they're now worried about the Channel 4 worldwide situation because they said, just because we've knocked back Kangaroo, we do realise that others are tentatively forming alliances in this area, and we're not saying that we're knocking them back. Hmm. So they've ditched
they've
the threesome.
They've obviously thought about it, yeah.
Well, they now realise this is an issue, and they can't be seen to be nixing any Channel 4 BBC Worldwide type before it happens.
All right. OK, thank you very much for that. You can read more about that story, of course, and many others at mediaguardian.co.uk. I'm Matt Wells. Still to come on Media Talk, Carol Thatcher gets the boot from the BBC and...
10 boys and 10 girls, both aged between 8 and 12, are about to discover where they'll be living, parent-free, for the next 2 weeks.
We'll have the verdict on Minder, Boys and Girls Alone, and the rest of the week's TV news. Before that, let's kick around some of the other media stories from the last 7 days. We're coming on to Carol Thatcher in a moment, but let's start with you, Emily, on Facebook turns 5.
I know.
Is it here to stay? Has it jumped the shark? On 5 Live now, on The Breakfast Show, they are plugging their presence on digital, on DAB, and on Facebook.
And on Facebook, so, no.
Just like Media Talk does.
Indeed, yes, and right. We are indeed on Facebook too. No, I think it's sort of fake, you know, the internet is made up of individual things which are very good for certain things, and Facebook is incredibly good for people to talk to each other and publish stuff, share photos, publish stuff, have talk boards for their controversial podcasts, that sort of thing. So no, I mean, you know, kind of it's a category killer at the moment, isn't it? And actually it, you know, I think sort of it's MySpace is slightly sort of ploughing a furrow, which means that it's used probably by people who create music a bit more. You know, Facebook is used by people who, you know, just want to sort of connect with each other, etc. You know, nothing is forever necessarily on the internet, but you know, then certainly certain companies get a level of momentum, yeah, and then it becomes very difficult to challenge them in the market. And I think Facebook is sort of at that point now.
Another birthday, Sky News is 20 years old.
Sky is 20 years old.
Well, Sky, yeah, the entire Sky operation. I mean, it's interesting. I was thinking about Sky News because it's interesting how it, more than anything, it defines Sky. It has defined Sky, whereas all their other channels, they really struggled for a long time, but it was always Sky News that defined a new grammar, really.
Yeah, I think so. Sky News certainly, well, Sky News and Sky Sports, I think, were both had a really profound effect on how the rest of television then sort of reacted. And actually some of the kind of techniques in Sky Sports and some of the techniques in Sky News are now widespread and not just in those sort of genres of programming.
Yeah, the live crosses and the standing up and the presentations, etc.
Well, it's like, you know, if you go back and watch the, I know this is not an original thought, but if you go back and watch the day-to-day 10 years ago, that is what Sky News is doing now.
It's interesting. I just want to point out that Maggie Brown has written a blog on this very subject not the least because she stood next to Rupert Murdoch when he flicked the switch for Sky 20 years ago.
She's been at all the top media stories, hasn't she?
But brilliantly, she recounts the fact that what happened when she tried to get a Sky Air satellite dish on her Dulwich house. It caused a huge row amongst all the neighbours. And she was labelled trying to bring a sense of council house television into the neighbourhood.
I was told to take my dish down. Off Westbourne Grove when I was young and groovy. No, I didn't. I lived between a crack house and some ladies of the night.
So which of those two?
Westminster Council. Westminster Council. So that will have to come down, and we moved.
They're quite happy to but the crack house and the whorehouse.
Crack house and the whorehouse were, I think, local services generating money for the local economy. I was just an eyesore.
the Evening Standard, sticking with London News, the Evening Standard is considering going part three, Stephen. What's all this about? Is this another consequence of the takeover by Lebedev?
Apparently they've had this idea for a while, and Andy Mullins, who's the managing director, who we think is going to play a very prominent role in the new company once Lebedev completes the deal later this month, has this idea that late into the night, when everyone who wants to buy a Standard has bought one, which is that key commuter period from people going home from work, so 9 p.m., 10 p.m., why not give away the extra copies that you haven't sold for free to people who want them? So it would be a way of boosting the distribution, making it more attractive for advertisers. But they haven't announced it publicly, but that seems to be the plan that's in the works.
Now, this was probably the most extraordinary tease that I gave you at the beginning. Sales of Country Life, not the butter, not the magazine, have soared. Well, maybe the magazine as well, but I don't know. It probably wasn't because of the John Lydon ad, which I'm not sure which is worse for people of a certain age, that campaign or Iggy Pop selling car insurance. But it goes to show that your ad doesn't have to be brilliant for it to be effective.
What's not brilliant about John Lydon doing Country Life butter?
Dressed as a squire, wasn't he?
I thought it was inspired. It's made me change from anchor spreadable.
Really?
Change your brand of butter?
No, indeed. He's from Finsbury Park. One has to support locals.
Is he? I didn't know that.
In the League of Gentlemen. Yeah. Right. Good North London boy.
I mean, the thing
drives
about
Volvo
that
as well. Also, you know, that means Guardian seal of approval.
The thing about that, though, is that advertising works, and you spend a lot of money, you get a big high-profile campaign, you have it on TV a lot. Guess what? Sales go up. What was interesting about that was that it was so different that it actually became a news story.
Yeah.
Thereby getting them lots of publicity without them having to pay.
It's also like the Cravendale cows. I don't know what it is with me and sort of, you know, adverts and dairy brands.
You know your butter market.
I know. Cravendale, as I say, never thought about it before. But now, because of those kind of ads with the cow models, you're looking bewildered, Stephen. You go out too much in the evening.
No, I was just going to recount the fact, this is the fun fact I learned last night from watching QI, you cannot buy margarine anymore in the UK.
I learned that from QI too.
Because I was actually at my Finsbury Park Tesco the other day.
Oh, I'm surprised I didn't see you there. Tesco Express.
No, I went to the bigger one up Stradmain Road. Anyway.
Posh end.
Yeah, but you look on all these packets of margarine. They're not margarine. They're not butter. What are they? Dairy spread. Yes. I can't actually...
You can't get...
What's the non-dairy. They are non-dairy spread.
They're non-dairy spread.
But with a bit of butter. I can't believe it's not butter. It's not butter, but what is it?
What is it?
It's homogenized
bits of old sausage,
Butter and bring back margarine. That's never mind the bollocks in the middle. Right, okay.
On QI, can I just say something? Yes. Stephen Fry, stuck in the lift, in Centrepoint.
On Twitter.
Twittered.
Yes.
Can I say hats off, both because I'm highly claustrophobic and, as you know, generally don't like to go in lifts.
Yes.
And secondly, because he took a picture and put it up there.
I've been in
brilliant,
that.
Brilliant citizen reporting.
I've been
in
that lift.
Why Twitter is taking off, though, isn't it? Because people realise they can get close to celebrities. Alan Carr's on it. Jonathan Ross is on it. Even Philip Schofield from This Morning is on it.
Is he really? So, yes, so you're just one step removed from them, aren't you?
You're not even one step. You can be sort of tweeting back and forth. Though I have to say, Russell Brand's not responded to any of my slightly inappropriate...
Dear, oh dear, I think we should leave that one there. Okay.
Dare to dream.
To have your say on any of these stories, do post a comment on our blog, guardian.co.uk.
Follow us on Twitter.
We're not on Twitter.
I am.
You can follow
/Emily Bell.
That's just me then.
Just you. You should get on there.
On the blog.
Media Guardian's on Twitter.
Is it?
Yes.
God, I need to get with the
program. You need to get out more. I do need to get out with the program. You and your fancy studio. Well, if
you see the thing
off
there,
the pace. I
well,
think.
if I need to move on from Facebook because of Five Live.
You certainly do. Twitter.
So Twitter is the thing. All right.
/ Matt Wells. Somebody might have that already.
Well, the real
Twittering is you.
The real Matt Wells.
I don't think I could get my name. I had to be SD Brooke.
I was an early adopter.
I do have a namesake who works for the BBC, of course.
I know him. Nice man.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Sorry, any other random thoughts before we go on? This is the random thoughts section. So
No.
We're out of time.
Okay. Thank you very much. This is the London news section. We've been talking about North London.
I think we've fully allayed the worries of people that there's a media metropolitan elite.
We need to get out of London more.
We work together. We shop together.
or as it's known, Zone 3. The other big media story this week, of course, was the hoo-ha caused by Carol Thatcher's wasn't it racist remark in a BBC green room following the taping of The One Show. Pretty soon, her comment was all over the media, and the BBC hierarchy relieved her of her roving reporting duties. The story refuses to go away. I think we're on day three as we record the pod. What do we make of it? Can I just say what I make of it?
Yes, because I just can see that you're bursting.
I'm absolutely bursting. I've been waiting to get onto this section for ages. Who are these people? The 2,200 people who've complained to the BBC. Are they the same people who go on the BBC message board and phone in Victoria Derbyshire or Nikki Campbell, whoever does the Five Live phone in now, and say that it's politically correctness gone mad? Since when has it been politically correctness gone mad to compare somebody or call somebody a goywog?
No, I mean, I'm completely with you on this one, Matt. I think it is bizarre that, you know, and actually, you can sort of say, well, it was people sneaking, it was in the green room, it was like, the trouble is, if you are on a BBC contract, you're sort of an ambassador for the BBC, and you have to, you know, this is not the 1950s. It's a bit like the royal family and their kind of, you know, racism difficulty. So people say, oh, well, they're not really racist. You say, no, hang on a second. No, they are really.
Because time,
and
the
they
thing
might,
is,
they
it
might not
have
be,
been,
yeah.
It might have been all right to have a gollywog 30, 40 years ago.
Well, no, it wasn't all right then. It was just that we didn't know it was wrong, if you see what I mean. Or rather, yes, those sort of times have changed.
And gollywog is used as a term of abuse still now on the football terraces. So, I mean, I don't understand anyone who says that it's some sort of harmless toy. It's not offensive. And also, we've got to put to bed this idea that it was some sort of, you know, it was private. Leaving aside whether it's acceptable in private anyway, the idea, Stephen, that the BBC Green Room is private, when you've got half the people there are journalists, it's a workplace environment anyway.
People come in and out, and we don't still definitively know what the context was and how many people heard.
Well, there's only a couple of things that she could have said. It was all the reports seem to suggest it was either he's the one that beat the gollywog, meaning in the, they were talking about the other tennis player who beat the guy that they were talking about. He's the one that beat the gollywog, or he's the one who beat the guy that looked like a gollywog. Either of them is pretty damn offensive.
But should you fire someone for that?
Yes.
Well, if she
even if she's apologised.
She didn't apologise.
Well, she didn't apologise. And also,
but
you're the BBC. I'm sorry, you are the BBC. And you have to say, you know, you're an ambassador for us. It's like Ron Atkinson. It doesn't matter the context, etc. Matt's absolutely right about this. It's in the workplace environment. And you have to say, this is a zero tolerance priority. Now, I'm suspecting that all the people who are saying that this is not offensive are not black.
Yes.
You know, and actually,
been called gollywog.
Yes, they don't get to say whether it's offensive or not. I'm sorry, it's not. Mm. You know, it's not their call. It's not their call.
There is the other aspect of this, though, isn't it? Isn't there, Stephen? Where it's yet another story in which the BBC has become the centre of the news rather than reporting it. Is this going to happen with every little local difficulty that it gets into now?
Look, if she'd been in the ITV green room, she'd been in the Channel 4 green room, she'd been in the Sky green room, would this whole thing have blown up in quite the same way? I think not. I think that and there's some justification that we pay for the license fee for the BBC, so therefore we're all there and we get a say in how we think it should run.
Mm. Well, I think it's also that, you know, the BBC is an employer which has, you know, quite high standards and hard targets in terms of equality and diversity, and so people have to feel that it's a comfortable place to work. You know, that I don't think that this is just about the image. I do think it is about actually sort of how you conduct yourself and how you talk respectfully in that workplace. Now, you know, Carol Thatcher would say, well, you know, actually sort of it wasn't meant in that way, or it was a joke or whatever. But actually, you know, if you are on a BBC contract, you should know, actually, that that's not acceptable.
What about going into The Guardian conference room making a blonde joke, you'd be frog marched out and roughed up behind the bike sheds, wouldn't you?
You'd be punched in the face, Brookie, by me.
So she was foolish, though. What was she thinking?
I think she probably wasn't thinking. I think it was just and it's a sort of a, you know, whatever. Don't know what went on in the
Thatcher
house.
And she's so loud, and you can just imagine that people instantly take offence.
I don't think, you know, but it's not just instantly taking offence. It's just there is a line.
What about the argument that people are raising that Jonathan Ross has got away with it? He said lots of rude things because he said rude things about old people. He's allowed to get away with it, whereas she makes a rude joke about black people, or rather didn't, but about gollywogs, and she doesn't get away with it.
Because she's a Thatcher, or she's a conservative. I've been thinking about this because the most offensive thing I find on the BBC is Little Britain and their Asian male or bright character, Ting Tong. Macadangdang, and I find that quite an offensive, racist joke and stereotype, but it's on there and it's broadcast, and I can't really reconcile that with what's happened to Carol Thatcher.
Well, I think people have also said, you know, Chris Moyles and his gay shoes, which we've been over more than once.
It's all about context, isn't it?
Well, I think it's about, you know...
And the trouble is that you know, we're not happy about the Chris Moyles context.
No, and I think that, you know, that actually, in terms of Little Britain, I completely agree with Stephen on this. I just think it's a vile programme, and actually not very funny. But it's more difficult when it's kind of within comedy, which is satirising something about modern life. I think it's sort of more if it's an attitude of your reporter, which is what, you know, Carol Thatcher was in this case, to be sort of using that. And I do think race is different, actually. I think that ageism is not sort of really acceptable. And I think for public service broadcasters, I'd be very careful. But I think race is different because it really, people do feel intimidated. And, you know, people have had sort of violence visited upon them and they don't feel comfortable to sort of live in their own country. And I think that's wrong.
Okay.
I just wonder, though, the other side of the coin here is, well, Jonathan Ross, the impact of that has obviously been huge on the BBC, and there is a group of BBC people who think that there's been an overreaction and they're still trying to learn the lessons of Ross. But on the diversity issue, is the BBC doing that well?
Because we've
had the big complaints that there wasn't a black Doctor Who cast, and Gareth's written that blog about the Today Show presenters all being white and increasingly male.
Well, senior management at the BBC still hideously white.
No, I think if you look across the BBC at their corporate diversity targets, in general, they do better than average. You know, they would say, and Greg Dyke, you know, said when he was there, and Mark Thompson would say they're still not doing well enough. But actually, they probably do more than, you know, certainly any other media organisation I know, to make sure that those are positive targets that they try and hit. And I think it's made harder if you're kind of, you know, if you're a sort of trainee or something and you're reading the press, and it's kind of actually okay for Carol Thatcher to say, you know, to use the term gollywog in a green room. How do you feel about that if you're a sort of a, you know, 19, 20 year old, you know, sort of black student on a multimedia course? You don't think, and if the BBC go, well, that's actually fine. It's like, I just think you have to set a tone.
Exactly.
And you know, Carol Thatcher, unfortunate, whatever, I'm afraid it's absolutely the right thing for the BBC to do.
To wrap this up, the one good thing I think that came out of it, I thought, was the BBC One controller, Jay Hunt. They put her up on the Today programme. And finally, there is a BBC executive who will stand up to the Daily Mail and stand up to the Today programme and sound like a human being, not like Caroline Thompson, who crumbles at the sight of John Humphreys, and Mark Thompson, who stutters his way through his Today programme.
I wonder, a bit early to call this one.
Yes.
First female Director General.
I
thought she was very good with on the John Sargent thing as well.
Yeah.
That she was the one who got them all out there on the Strictly Come Dancing set to say, no, this is all a bit of a joke. And you actually thought if she'd been in charge of Manuel Gate, she might have had Andrew Saxon, his agent, you know, and a big stall full of Fawlty Towers DVDs, done a similar job. I think, well played, Jay.
Well played, Jay Hunt. Another Jay Hunt fact, just before we move on to our last segment, Stephen Brooks, she wouldn't just be the first female Director General. Stephen, what would she be?
She'd be the first Australian Director General.
Not that you could tell it from her accent, though.
No, well, word is that she moved over to Britain when she was 12 years old.
And promptly enrolled in Chiswick School for Girls or whatever.
No, it was Lady Anne Hollis.
Oh, I see. Okay, very good.
I think.
Yeah, top J. Hunt facts here. This is very good. And this is the point at which the Guardian's TV writer and previewer Gareth McLean would ordinarily join us. But unfortunately, he's stuck on a snowbound train in Northumbria or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Is he snowed in?
He's on a train that's
wrong type of snow.
that run into a snowdrift.
Gareth can't come into work because of the wrong type of snow.
Yeah. Have we been getting live Twitter updates?
We haven't been. He's not on Twitter either.
I was going to say, he should be twittering from a train. He should be like, yes, little pictures of his little face pressed against a steamy window. Help!
I've just had a sausage roll. Yeah.
But I'm sure he would have talked about these subjects. The Return of Minder, Channel 5 remake. Stephen Brook, did you... I sat through the whole thing. Brookie, what did you think about it?
I actually thought it was okay, but it's such a...
Oh, come on, it was shocking. It was terrible. Why is it with Channel 5? Everything they touch turns to shite, doesn't it? I just don't understand. Why could they make something that's so potentially good so bad?
Well, could you? You could make it potentially good because that shows a complete prisoner to its past, isn't it? You are never going to get someone as good as George Cole to do the Arthur daily. And you're never going to get someone with the charisma of Dennis Waterman to play the Terry figure.
So. I quite like the Terry figure. He was the only one in it that I quite enjoyed the rest of them.
I actually thought the best character was the...
Which one?
Black policewoman. She was quite feisty.
Oh, I don't know. But she didn't. She turned up without a warrant. Policemen don't do these sorts of things these days, do they? They try to sort of...
Well, you should ask Damien Green.
That's true. Very good. Okay. Now, and what else have we been watching? Have you been watching Boys and Girls Alone?
I watched about 15 minutes of it with my 11-year-old. He was gripped. I bet.
Probably left the house and locked the front door.
That's right. Yes, exactly. I said, yes, keep watching. I'll phone you from the pub later.
Was it what you'd expect to have happened? I guess it is, isn't it?
Well, they sort of said, oh, you know, the girls are all self-organising but can't get on, and the boys are hopeless and want their mums. So from that point of view, yes, broadly. Okay.
There's been this debate. Do you think it's a spurious debate about it being all a bit sort of nasty and...
Well...
Do you think it was fascinating enough television to justify the distress that the kids...
I tell you what I think that Channel 4 does.
As a mother of four.
I tell you what I think that sort of Channel 3. I tell you what, it seems like four. I tell you what I think, which is that actually Channel 4 does make programmes that make people talk.
Yes.
And I know that we've been sort of cruel about Channel 4 on a serial basis about some of their sort of strategic managerial calls. But actually, I think their programming this year has been pretty impressive.
It's the end of Channel 4 Food Week or Food Fortnight. It seems to have gone on for ages, but there have been some top shows in that. The Little Chef one was like a rocket.
Yeah, Big Chef, Little Chef.
Is that what it was called?
Big Chef takes on Little Chef. Yeah. I think they make people talk, and I think that people are talking about childhood, and they sort of actually played it into a schedule at a time when the report on childhood was coming out. I think that sort of in some ways they're kind of, you know, I think they're kind of, you know, the Celebrity Big Brother, not very fascinating, doesn't really matter. Actually, they're kind of firing in their, you know, kind of factual entertainment department, really sort of on all cylinders at the moment.
Well,
does I sound like an apologist?
No, good God, we've been rotten to Channel 4, bad, you know, we're allowed to be nice to them, you know, once every 6 months. Stephen Brook, any plans to be an X Factor judge? No views on that, sorry.
No, I do. I'm just wistfully, you know, thinking about a far wilder horizon than the four corners of The Guardian to be an X Factor judge.
Or possibly Sky One controller. That's the other. It's wilder.
I think X Factor judge wilder more fun, down less responsibility. Oh. Yeah, closer to central London.
Well, I'm afraid that it's the new cycle of Merck and Idol. X Factor just pales.
Can I just say,
new cycle of America's Next Top Model. Also, Britain's Next Top Model pales.
Into insignificance.
Yes.
I am an X Factor judge, but I do it from the comfort of my lounge room.
Yes.
We're all X Factor judges now.
Yes. Very good. Well, I think that's quite enough of all that on that social networking note. That'll be it for this week. If you want to have your say in any of our topics, follow the official channel to guardian.co.uk/mediatalk or go wild over on Facebook.
Or Twitter.
Yeah, okay, we'll go.
Go at Emily Bell on Twitter and then petition me for a podcast Twitter feed.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I can't believe I said that.
Yeah, that's
finally lost my mind.
We can just do it now if you like. It didn't take 5 minutes to set up a Twitter feed, doesn't it?
It doesn't. Yeah, no, it takes less than that. Okay. I could do it right now.
We'll do it right now. Thanks to Emily Bell and Stephen Brook. Media Talks produced by Ben Green. I'm Matt Wells. Thanks for listening.